the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to fight deceit.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We have seen increasing numbers of patients come to this clinic, especially since the passage of HB2 in Texas, who are seeking abortion care. And so it's concerning to us, being from this part of the country in the center of the United States, which we call the abortion desert, that women do not have adequate access to reproductive health care. And so we're very committed to providing access to abortion care to people in this region up to the legal limit. Because we believe that all people and their families should have the ability to make decisions about their reproductive health and when and whether to parent a child.
That's Julie Burkhart, founder and chief executive of Trust Women and Southwind Women's Center in Wichita, Kansas, talking about what's being called the abortion desert, a area through the southwest of our country, including Texas, where abortion clinics are very few and far between. Does the U.S. Constitution or even the Roe v. Wade decision that gave us legalized abortion for all 9 months in the United States on demand, and still does it guarantee a woman easy access to an abortion clinic near her place of residence? It sounds like that's being presupposed here, especially when we talk about these areas as abortion deserts. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Carol Tobias of National Right to Life will be our guest here for the first few minutes. We'll be talking to her from Washington, D.C. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. We'll do our series, Christ in the Old Testament, today. Psalm 30, Joy Comes in the Morning. You can join us for the next hour with your questions or comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Carol Tobias is a regular guest. She's president of National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C. Carol, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. It's great to be back.
Does the Constitution or even the Roe v. Wade decision guarantee women easy access to an abortion clinic near them, in their town, in their city, or even in their state?
Well, certainly the Constitution doesn't. I think an accurate reading of that precious document would say that there is no right to abortion, period. Supreme Court rulings have decided that you cannot place undue burdens on women. So that can be open to interpretation. If they have to drive a couple of hours to find an abortion facility, is that an undue burden? Now, certainly we would say no, but of course those who are providing the abortions would say that it is.
People drive across state lines regularly to get specialized medical care, to get surgery, to go to, say, the Mayo Clinic if they have something that's beyond the abilities or the resources of their local medical community, and I don't hear anyone saying, I need a Mayo Clinic in my neighborhood. What are your thoughts?
I think that's a great comparison. I have no problem with telling someone that there is no local abortion facility, so if you really want to kill your child, you are going to have to drive quite a distance. I've seen articles on the report that you were just playing from people who are really upset because these women can't just, you know, go down 3 blocks or maybe 3 miles to get an abortion. And yet nowhere in any of this, and the purpose of these articles is to make us feel sorry for the women and maybe even a little anger at the state legislators that are passing some laws that might make abortion facilities harder to operate. But nowhere in these stories are they talking about the babies. In one Los Angeles Times article, they're talking to Willie Parker, who is an abortionist down in the Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia area. And he's talking about how he gets women who come after 15 weeks of pregnancy because they can't get, you know, they can't kill their baby anywhere else. And I'm thinking, do people realize that 15 weeks, that means the baby is 4 months old, fully developed, heart beating, brain waves, kidneys, liver. The baby is just getting lost in this whole picture. So I have no problem with abortion facilities being shut down, either because of legislative regulations or because there just isn't enough business that not enough women are seeking abortion.
Well, that's my next question, and that's as much as people will decry the existence of so-called abortion deserts, these areas where abortion clinics are few and far between, what actually has created them?
It is a combination, partly because state legislatures have passed some very good laws to protect unborn children, to protect the women, and the abortion facilities decide they just can't afford to keep the place operating. A large part of it is because women are just not seeking abortion. We are seeing the abortion rate and ratio drop. Fewer women of childbearing age are seeking abortion, especially among teenagers, younger women. If they do get pregnant, they are choosing life for their baby. So there are a combination of reasons that there are not that many abortion facilities operating.
There were a couple euphemisms. I wouldn't call abortion desert a euphemism. It's an attempt to kind of scare up some language and some passion on the issue. But there were a couple of euphemisms used in that little bit that we heard earlier from the abortion clinic director. And she used it several times, I think 3 times. She used the term abortion care. What do you make of that?
Well, of course, they want us to think this is all very warm and fuzzy. There's even a place in Maryland that calls itself a spa where you come in to get an abortion and they're going to put you in a nice fluffy robe, give you a cup of hot tea. They want us to think that this is just all such a nice, loving option for women who are in a difficult circumstance, when we know that helping her through the pregnancy and helping that child to survive, even if that means, you know, placing the child for adoption so someone else can raise that baby, there are just so many other things that can be done. But yes, they want us to associate abortion and care and love and warm, fuzzy feelings with a very cruel, very gruesome procedure where unborn children are killed, often by having their arms and legs torn off the body so that they bleed to death.
Are we seeing, in effect, at least a glimpse into what might be the case if Roe v. Wade were ever overturned or, in some sense, you know, legally neutered? I don't know how else to say it. That the states would be deciding, and the market would be deciding, and as you pointed out earlier, quite frankly, women would be deciding instead of others.
If Roe v. Wade was overturned, the situation in the country would go back to the way it was prior to 1973, where every state would make its own laws. And there certainly are many states in this country that would immediately make abortion illegal in all or most circumstances. So we would have a situation where some women in some states can't get them because it would be illegal, and they would be traveling to other states. And then we would just keep working on state by state until we can make the entire country abortion-free so that the babies are protected. And I do want to just remind the audience, I know they already know it, but there are more pregnancy resource centers in this country than there are abortion facilities. A woman who is in a difficult circumstance, a tough pregnancy, can get help. The pro-life movement has loving arms and open hearts, ready and willing to help her through any circumstance.
I see the proposed solution from the advocates of abortion already being talked about, and that is to force hospitals that get any kind of state funding or federal funding of any kind to perform abortions. What are your thoughts there, Carol?
That definitely is a push. They want hospitals to provide abortions. They're pushing more and more to get medical schools to be performing abortions. They're pushing that the medical schools have to be training their physicians how to do abortions. The abortion industry is certainly looking for ways to keep the procedure available. What we are working on, and certainly what we pray for, is that those men and women who go into the medical profession would decide that they want to save lives, they want to help women and children, and not kill those babies.
I want your response to something that Whitney Phillips, a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains, had to say, and your response to it. Whitney says, when we see women having to travel long distances across state lines or hours away from their home to get the care they need, it has a rippling impact. They have to arrange their work schedules, childcare, travel, and finances in order to see a provider. In the event that they need more than one appointment, that can be crippling, especially for lower-income women. What's your response?
I would encourage every single one of those women to not put up with that hassle of trying to find a way to get the abortion, but instead seek the help that is available in the community right where they live. Pro-lifers will help her with any help that she needs. A lot of the pregnancy centers also are doing job training and school courses that women who are in that difficult circumstance can get help. And I would encourage them to seek the help that is available in their community rather than driving hundreds of miles to kill that baby.
Before we let you go, Carol, I wanted to ask you about something that I'm sure you're aware of. It was kind of making the rounds in social media, just a kind of a little mini documentary of a man on the street, or in this case, women on the street, talking to women who at first profess to be pro-choice, then they watch kind of an excerpt of an actual abortion, how many of those women almost immediately change their minds on this issue. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I have seen the videos, and I think it is just absolutely amazing. They're set up so that a former abortionist is describing how unborn babies are killed in the various abortion procedures. And it is extremely difficult to watch those and then think that it is still a humane procedure that should be allowed. Now, I've seen the video that you're talking about, and I think it's at least a third, maybe even more, of the people who see the videos change their minds, because, quite frankly, people in this country who say they're pro-choice, who say that a woman should have, you know, the right to make that decision, don't know what they're talking about. And if they can see a video that shows how an abortion is done, it can be stomach-churning. And I'm thrilled that the videos are out there.
That, along with what we have learned in the last year or so about Planned Parenthood, about what the abortion industry has been doing now for decades without really the consent or even the knowledge of the public, do you see, in any sense, the tide turning on this, very slowly, but turning on this issue when it comes to public opinion?
I am. I'm seeing that tide change. Younger people are more pro-life than their parents. More and more people are saying that abortion should not be allowed. Women are not choosing abortion. More of them are letting the baby live. And I'm just very optimistic about the future of the country. And yet, on the other hand, the abortion industry is evil. They are making money. This is definitely a profit-making business. They don't care about the babies. They don't care about the women. They're looking at that bottom line for the dollar. And they are going to do everything they can, fighting tooth and nail, to keep the procedure legal so they can keep harming women and killing babies. So we have a tough battle ahead of us. But I think that public opinion is coming our way. This is a human rights issue. That baby is a human being that needs to be protected. Tough battle, but I'm still optimistic.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to them at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Carol, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, and I encourage you and your organization, keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Todd. I appreciate that.
When we come back, it's time for our series, Christ in the Old Testament. Today, we're going to be talking about Psalm 30, Joy Comes in the Morning. Pastor Brian Ketchermeyer will be our guest. We're going to look at that psalm. I think it's going to begin with seeing this psalm as the words of Christ. We'll find out right after this.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Redeemer Lutheran, Mandeville, Louisiana. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Louisville, Nebraska. Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida, St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia, and Emmaus Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues, Etc. 300.